My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Michael.
And thank you so much for the meditation time and the lay aside prayer. And I'm just going to say a little further prayer. Dear God, please help us to remember, especially me, that we are nothing without you. Please help us to see where powerlessness begins. Please help us to see all the areas in our life where we are powerless, not just with alcohol, but all things that need to be surrendered here today. Please help us to see where unmanageability begins. Please help us to see the current unmanageability in our lives. Please give us direction on what to do next from when we leave here, from when this meeting ends. Please give us a solution for the next 5 minutes, for the next 5 days, for the next 5 weeks. Please help us to be encouraged to do some things that help us to change our lives. Dear God, please mold us and help us to live up to your sexual ideals for us. Dear God, please also help us to mold a safe and sane sex ideal for ourselves and relationships that we are currently in and relationships that we enter into moving forward. Please help us to illuminate every dark cranny and twisted character from our past and our present. Please remove whatever is blocking us from you. Please remove whatever is blocking me from these people. Please remove whatever is blocking these folks from me. And most importantly, dear God, please remove what is blocking all of us from you, so we can have an open mind, an open heart, and a new experience with you right here, right now. Amen.
Amen.
So for folks who are new and coming back, we've been doing this for a little while, where we've been taking you through the process of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And so some of the things that were said in the prayer may seem a little strange. Where we are right now, we're talking about the fourth step, and with God's help, we'll also talk about the fifth step. And in particular about the fourth step, there's three kinds of inventories: a resentment inventory, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory. I write these inventories because I'm totally convinced of how much alcohol is out to destroy me every single moment of my day, every single moment of my life. Drunk or sober, this thing wants to kill me. I'm aware of that, and because of that, I'm here today. Because of that, I've written an inventory, and where we left off last week is we had finished this relationship inventory, and what it was like. I still have a sheet of paper that might help some people doing one of those inventories, but if you have questions about it, it's on page 69. And at the end of the inventory, where we were last week, we had discussed doing something called a sex ideal. And I was given a prayer at the first day of writing my relationship inventory, my sex inventory. I was given this direction to say this prayer: Dear God, please mold me and help me to live up to my sexual ideal. I say this prayer today, often, constantly. Dear God, please mold me and help me to live up to my sexual ideal. Dear God, please mold me and help me to live up to my sexual ideal. Dear God, please mold me and help me to live up to my sexual ideal. I say this on my knees every morning, almost every morning, that I'm conscious of what's going on in my life. This is an area of my life that I need constant help and direction. But the truth of the matter is I need constant help and direction with all areas of my life. And I feel blessed because of that. I'm blessed to have that realization that my powerlessness doesn't just end with alcohol. that in all honesty, I'm powerless over everything. And, you know, as a friend had asked me recently, you know, what does it feel like to be powerless over everything? And for the first few moments, it's tough. But right after that tough moment, it's so freeing. It's so freeing to be powerless. I get to stop managing my life, your life, the politics, the world views, society, television, you know, religion, people, women, everything. And when I get to stop managing all of these things, I'm free. There's a little start for me of freedom. And so last week I read to you about one of the relationships that I had 20-something years ago, and about the defects and the areas where I was at fault in those relationships, or that particular relationship. Emotionally unavailable. I was an emotional cheater, right? I had that work wife, you know, that other person that I talked my feelings to and these other things. That not only did I objectify her, but I objectified all other women. I engaged in, you know, objectification of other women, which definitely kept me from that relationship. I mocked, I mimicked, I ridiculed, I made fun of. I did not involve her in my family relationships. I did not involve my family in any of my relationships. I spent lots of time talking to my family about where I was annoyed in my relationship, and I would talk about my relationship, all the areas where I was annoyed with my parents. And I would do this before I ever introduced the two. I would set them up for a war. I would set them up for a natural dislike. I would set them up for all these opinions and stuff from a crazy guy, from a crazy drunken point of view. And from a crazy insecure person's point of view. Because when I complained about you, I get energy. When I complained about her, I get energy from you. When I complained about them, I get energy for you. Poor me. Look at me. I'm a victim. This is what she did to me. This is what they did to me. This is what they're doing here, whatever. And I failed to point out where she was a good woman, where I liked her, the things that she, you know, why I was even attracted to her in the first place. And the people in the relationship that I was hurting, right? I hurt my parents, I hurt her parents, I hurt her family, I hurt her grandmother, I hurt, you know, in other relationships, I hurt the little kid, you know, the cousins, the brothers, my own family. It says here, gosh, I don't know why it's coming out, but it says here on page 73, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. By the way, that's drunk or sober. Right? More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life, drunk or sober. So that means I'm leaving a double life with a drink, without a drink. Right? I still want, and I talked to you last week about how I had this idea of what a real man is. Right? A real man is Clint Eastwood. A real man is Fonzie. A real man is, you know, looks like Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio. That's a real man. If I'm going to have a healthy relationship, I got to be all of these things. The problem is I understood, as I told you last week, that from third grade I knew I was none of those things, but I spent the rest of my 30 years trying to convince you I was. And so now I go forth from that relationship, you know, 20 or more years ago, I'm writing down everywhere where I was selfish, where I aroused bitterness, where I aroused jealousy, in all of my relationships. And now I'm asking God to help mold me a new sex ideal for me. And what does that mean? Two things. It means what how does God want me, my higher power, God as I understand him, right? How does he want me to show up in my next relationship? How would he like me to be with women moving forward, or anybody that I have intimate relationships moving forward, including male friends? Because, see, the thing is I'm so screwed up with female situations that I'm also lying to all my guy friends to try to convince you that I'm also Clint Eastwood and that I'm also the Fonz and all this other stuff. And those who are somewhat convinced or at least play along with me, you're my friends. You're my bros. You're whatever. You know what I mean? You're my dogs or some sort of stuff, whatever that nonsense, you know, macho crap is that goes on. You know, if you, you know, let me think that at least you think that I might be a Clint Eastwood, even if it's from one of his like not so famous films, we're cool, right? You know, even if you play along that I'm Fonzie for a few minutes, we're great, right? So even in those relationships, I'm screwed up. I'm lying to all of you about what I'm doing in the bedroom, you know, or I'm over extrapolating something. Right? You know, about how she likes me or how she doesn't like me or whatever. I'm extrapolate everything because you guys got stories that I don't have. And because I don't have those stories, there's something wrong with me. Because I didn't have those fantasies or those fetishes, or I do or whatever, or your opinions on them or whatever, I don't match up to those stories. So I have to bring something to the locker room, you know, at 13 and 14 that I'm not prepared to bring. Or that I don't have. And the thing is, you know, what I'm not bringing is me, my true identity. So my relationships with men also is something that I need to look at. And so that's number one. How does God want me to show up in my next relationship? How does God want me to show up moving forward? And also, what am I looking for? What kind of person does he have in store for me? Either in my current relationship or a future relationship. In my case, it's always been a future relationship, but I do have some experience working within a relationship with those ideals as well. And so the first exercise was that my sponsor had me do was he had me write a prayer. He had me write a prayer of what it is he wants me to be. Well, you know, I can sit and meditate on these things for a long time, right? What do you want from me, God? What do you want from me, God? And sit on a mountaintop and go into the churches and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, I did those things too. Asking God, what do you want? Where do you want? How do you want me to be? How do you want me to be? But, you know, the answer is right here in black and white. I set it down on paper, right? If I'm not a loyal man, if I'm a dishonest man, if I'm mocking and mimicking you and making fun of you, if I'm verbally and physically abusive, if I'm unable to show up emotionally, well, guess what? God wants me to be the opposite of a lot of those things. In fact, in my case, he wants me to be the opposite of all of those things. So for me, it was really easy to kind of set these things down on paper. I definitely had needed some guidance because I'd written years of inventory and had lots of mistakes and things of that nature. But, you know, the first thing was a prayer. God, thank you for the direction and guidance towards complete honesty towards all men and women, the courage to stand up for what I believe in and to do what is right. Your love for me makes me secure with my sexuality and who I am and who I want to be. Thank you, God, for the power to be a patient, loving, fatherly, faithful, loyal, respectful, romantic, passionate, sensitive, caring, responsible, open-minded, selfless, and considerate gentleman. You teach me, God, that I should never rush to judgment, to keep my promises, and to be true to my word, and how to be completely loyal in thought, word, and deed in my relationships with women. You have given me the ability to seek to know truth and to grow in spirituality with a woman towards you, my Creator. Most of all, God, I thank you for bringing me your spirit of peace, serenity, security, wisdom, hope, charity, and everlasting love. the gifts of your Holy Spirit that show me how to love you, women, and all those you put in my path with my whole heart, my whole mind, and my whole soul. And so I have a similar prayer for saying, thank you, God, for creating this type of person, right? And what is this type of person, right? You know, it's not just Pam Anderson, right? It's not just, you know, she does that thing with her finger, right? She's got that kind of neat, those couple neat little tricks or whatever. What I'm really looking for is someone who's going to help me, support me, not tear me down, build me up, you know, a friend, a companion. Actually, many of these things that I'm looking for in myself is something that I'm looking for in them. And so I ask God to do the same thing. Help me form a prayer for that person. And every day, after I've done this ideal, I'm saying this prayer and that prayer. This prayer and that prayer every day, along with my other prayers. First step prayers, third step prayers, resentment, fear, sex, ideal prayers, all that stuff. And anything else that I've been directed to do through my journey and seeking process of this power called God. And so, that's the first time I did it. First time I did a sex ideal, that's how it looked. Then I wrote inventory again, and then I wrote inventory again. And throughout that process, my sponsor asked me to do something else. Right? Having these prayers are good. But because, you know, I'm the type of guy that, a nice pair of legs and a pair of nicely painted nails, and all of a sudden, I'm forgetting everything else that I'm looking for. All of a sudden, even though I have tons of evidence, you know, I have tons of evidence about relationships that don't work out for me. I have tons of evidence about that I'm dating the wrong person. But once I get a couple things, once she shows up, like Pam Anderson or whatever the story is, all of a sudden, I forget all of that stuff. It goes out the window. So my sponsor had asked me to do something where it's like I call it a filter, a spiritual filter. And at any point in time, my sponsor or any healthy people that I trust with this information can pull out my spiritual filter and say, where are you with these things? Where is she with these things? And so what he had me do was as I started an outline, right? And I started an outline where I'm taking, you know, areas where I'm not showing up. Like, for example, I'm the kind of guy who goes out, I love you, I romance you, I try to make like we're married, I suck you into this kind of relationship, I'm all over you, you know, I'm, you know, really, you know, like 100% focused on you and the relationship, and I say nice things and all these other things, and I say them and I mean them too, right? But once I know that you like me too, once I know you feel the same way too, I totally take you for granted. The flowers stop showing up, you know, stop opening the doors, stop doing the sweet little things. All of a sudden, it's I'm not telling you who I'm with. All of a sudden, I'm not letting you know what's going on. All of a sudden, you know, I'm carrying on with things on the computer or, you know, certain clubs and places like that. I'm emotionally unavailable. I become an emotional cheater and all these other things. Once I get you to, you know, once I, you know, I know you like me or I think, you know, you like me or you convinced me that you like me or whatever, I take you for granted. And so he would ask me to take something like that, right, and write about it. You know, just take this one thing, you know, say, always being a quarter, right, always being diligent in the relationship, always showing up, always making her a priority, always making her a champion. And so I would write about these things, right, just like an outline. I'd write my thing, then I'd write, you know, a little story about it, then I'd write just like a normal outline, A, this, B, this, C, this, D, this. And my sponsor knows I'm an extremely wordy guy, right? You may have picked up on that, right? I'm carrying over the fourth step into the fifth step week, right? And you've seen it probably going on throughout your experience with me so far, right? Take up all the time. He knows I'm a big mouth, and he knows I'm, you know, very wordy. He reads my inventory. He hears me, my inventories and stuff like that. And so what he wants me to do is then take this stuff and just bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. And to make it short, concise, one word, two words, really simple type stuff about what I'm looking for. And in particular, for example, it's like he wants me to take some categories. He wants me to write things like, these are the things that I must have. I have to have these things. If you don't have these things, I can't be in a relationship with you. Right? Red flags. If you're doing this, walk away. Right? Because like, you know, like again, nice pair of legs, you know, you like the same music I do or something like that, and all of a sudden, I forget, you know, that you're holding a red flag in my face. Right? Then there are the things that I have to list as things that I would really like to have. Right? And then there's the things that would be nice to have. Right? But, you know, I could compromise on this stuff. You know, like, let's say, you know, music's a big deal to me. Right? It's a really big deal to me. There's certain types of music that I can only handle for so long. Right? You know, so if we're doing the 10-hour like road trip thing, this and we are, you know, completely opposed in these areas, either we both have to agree on speaker tapes, books on tapes, or something like that. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be this real heavy thing inside of me that I may not be able to deal with too well. And so, however, if you've got some of these things that I would really like you to have, well, I might be able to compromise some of these other things that, you know, it'd be nice to have the music thing, but I'll trade that off at any point in time. And so then what happens is the ideal becomes something like this. And unfortunately, I don't have my really nice version. My book got lost some time ago, and I haven't copied it. So this is all my, like, scratch paper stuff. But it becomes, you know, really broken down like this, you know. They have to be in fit spiritual condition. Oh, no, that's me. Sorry. I have one of these for me. I have one of these for me, and I have to be, and I need one of these for her, right? So for me, you know, I got to be in fit spiritual condition. What does that mean? Well, am I thorough with my inventory? Am I completing my amends? Am I helping other people? Am I showing up to my home group? Am I praying every morning? Am I praying every day? Am I asking God to mold me? Am I listening to what He's asking me to do in regards to these issues? Or, you know, am I gallivanting on that stuff? Not to mention the stuff and the obligations that I've already decided I also need to do. Forget about what I'm doing here in AA. There's other things that I'm doing outside of AA that also, I believe, keep me in fit spiritual condition. And there's other kind of spiritual guidelines that I'm looking to live by. Am I living by those? Right? Am I living by those principles? You know, because the theory is this. If I'm not in fit spiritual condition, chances are I'm going to attract somebody who's not in too very spiritual condition either, right? And so, and one of the things that I was taught from my second fifth step and my second sex inventory and these other things, this guy talked to me about something called radical forgiveness. It's this theory. There's literature on it, whatever. I didn't read it, so I'm not going to pretend I know all about it, but one of the things he pointed out is like, Michael, you keep dating the same person. Different face, different looks, different hair, different body type or whatever, but you're dating the same person, right? You're dating the victim. You're dating and attracting the, say, you know, the people that do some pretty off things in public. You're always dating the person who pushes your buttons, right? Now, those are my red flags. You know, there's those people out there who just want to see how far you'll go, just want to see how much you can take, want to see just how, you know, how much you can put up with. I am not that guy. I've learned through experience that I do not need to get my buttons pushed. I do not need to get pricked, right? Ugly stuff comes out. I don't need any of that stuff. I really need somebody who's calm, serene. The way I describe it, I need somebody who's able to sit with and talk to the Hulk, right? Because one thing that I know is true about me, and this is alcoholism in my life as I understand it, you know, and simply fine. I believe I'm the Incredible Hulk, right? I believe I'm this guy, David Banner, who's now had an experience, right, with the violence and the mania and all this other stuff, right? You know, where you don't want to get me angry, right? Hulk doesn't like to get angry. You don't want to see me angry. And you see there's like, I used to watch this television show about the Hulk. You see him change different colors of green and all this other stuff. Because generally speaking, the alcoholic I am, I'm the type of guy that once I reach to a certain point, I'm grabbing some stuff, you know, some booze. I'm getting lit up. Next thing I know, I'm wearing different clothes. My face is scratched up. My pants are ripped. There's holes in the wall. And I'm like, what happened last night? What did I do last night? You know, what happened to me? And now I got to ask you what happened, right? Now, thankfully, that monster came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I wound up finding a solution to help keep that monster at bay, right? But I'm still the guy who's walking around continuously trying to find that solution that's going to permanently or as much as possible eradicate that monster from ever coming out. One thing that I've learned is, I can't be with somebody who nags all the time. If you're the person who's going to always be telling me what I need to be doing and what I need to be doing, whatever, you know what I mean? I have experience with that type of person. I have experience living with that person. I have that experience having those family members around. And generally speaking, I run to the bar. Or I carry on with some other maniac-like behavior. I can't have it. Red flag. I can't have it. Red flag. Doesn't matter how cute you are. Doesn't matter how what kind of neat tricks you do. Doesn't matter, you know, if we have the same, you know, spiritual ideas or concepts of God, or if you're an AA too or whatever, or if you know me like the back of my hand. If you're that person, I can't do it. I just can't do it. So what happens is I take this filter and I give it to my sponsor. And he's just like, well, what's the story? Right? Because, from what I learned too about this idea of radical forgiveness is I'm going to keep dating the same person over and over again until I learn my lesson about these relationships. And until I forgive myself for dating that person, staying in that relationship, and not learning that lesson, and making a firm commitment to not make that mistake again, I'm going to keep repeating the patterns over and over and over again. I'm going to keep dating the victim, or I'm going to keep dating the abuser. I'm going to keep dating the cheater, right? I'm going to keep dating, in my head, like we talked before, the gold digger, right? It's just nuts. So I take this filter and I give it to my sponsor, and he'll say, well, how are you showing up? Are you always courting her? Are you always being this guy? Or are you taking her for granted, right? Are you setting up boundaries like you said you had to do, right? Hey, listen, you're telling me that, you know, this week in your inventory she nagged you. You're telling me this week in your inventory she nagged you. You told me in this inventory this week she nagged you. Well, guess what, dude? According to this, you know, relation's over. He'll tell me he's a loving guy. You know, he's like, do whatever you want. But, you know, I've read, you know, and listened to hours and weeks of your insanity. He's like, I know where this ends up. So I have this little outline. And I just have little bullet points, right? Family-oriented, maternal, right? There's compatibility, sexual, emotional, right? God compatibility. I've been doing this thing for a little while, right? I have a concept of God. Maybe you don't need to have the same concept of God, but I know from experience, I've written tons of stuff about this stuff. I know for me, I can't have a feeling of resistance. If I feel you resist my concept of God, this isn't going to work out. If I feel you resist even my politics, this isn't going to work out. We can be friends. We can hang out. It doesn't mean we have to agree on politics. It doesn't mean we have to agree on some of these things. But the problem is if I start to feel resistance, if I start to feel like you're an idiot about that stuff, or that concept of God you have is stupid or whatever, it's not going to work out. I'm going to take that thing and I'm going to run with it. And it's going to create all these other stories. And how do I know? It's in my inventory. It's happened over 30 years of work, right? I've seen it. So now today, my sex ideal is something like that. I usually keep it in my big book. And when I sit down with my sponsor and I'm in a relationship or whatever, or I'm courting somebody or whatever, he'll go, hey, how's it going? Pull out your sex ideal. Let's talk about it. Let's see where you're at with all these things, right? And it's a great way for me to hold myself accountable, but because I'm so sick and twisted, right? Because I'm so easily deceived by material things or certain stuff, or because the last girl didn't like my music and this one does, I forget about all the other things that you're not. And my sponsor will pick it up and goes, dude, you know, you told me she's got some issues with that, you know, spiritual advisor you're checking out. You know, and he holds this up to me because that's what a sponsor is. He's a mirror. Sponsor holds up a mirror and shows me, this is you. This is where you're going. This is the situation in your life, you know. And, you know, I think either, you know, I think you need to pray about that or whatever the situation is. So, and another thing is through my experiences, is sex ideals can change, right? Whatever it is today, you know, is a place to start from in which to grow. And I might find that by looking for this or behaving a particular way, that either maybe I was a little extreme about these things or I may be a little loose about these things. And generally speaking, it says something about it. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends. It's page 69 in the bottom thing. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring more harm. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. So what should I do about, God bless you, you know, intercourse or going to the movies or dealing with family situations or Christmas or Thanksgiving or, you know, riding in the 10-hour trips or music and all this other stuff, children, how to raise them, what religion, no religion, all these other kind of particular things. Each of these very specific matters, right, you know, kinky stuff. Whatever. Each of these specific matters, I need to ask God, what should I do on these matters? Here's the deal. It's a promise. It's my experience. The right answer will come. It says, if we want it. And at some point in time, I may not be willing to accept the fact that massage parlors while I'm in a relationship is a bad idea. But after doing this thing and after asking God to continually to mold my ideals and whatever, I may realize, you know what? It's not such a great ideal. Mm-hmm. It's not such a great idea. I'm taking from her. I'm stealing from her. You know, even though we may have even agreed upon certain things to be okay, it's not right. And if I want it and if I continually ask God to mold and shape and do these things, He is going to reveal it to me. He is going to show it to me. I'm eventually going to be unhappy until I start making those changes. It, you know, I may not be unhappy with all areas of my life, but when it comes to relationships, I will. In certain areas of those relationships, I will. And that's my experience. Then what? That's my experience. Right. So, what if we fall short of our ideal? Page 70, right? All right, I'm supposed to be a gentleman. I'm supposed to be a loyal man. You know, I'm supposed to be honest. I'm supposed to be pure. You know, I'm supposed to be committed. I'm supposed to not do certain things until I'm committed, whatever it is. I'm also looking for somebody who's all of these things as well and have some of these things lined up for me. And initially, you know, it might seem for me that, like, you know, God, you're asking for a lot of crazy stuff. You're asking for a lot, you know, it's like, do you want me to, you know, do you want me to be a priest here? What's the story? What do you want, you know, what do you want from me, you know? No woman out there is going to follow up all of these things, right? Especially, I mean, I live in New York. Yeah, no, they're not over there. Definitely not. Even though there's like quadruple the amounts of population possibilities out there, my mind says no. Well, I got to be willing to work towards it. I got to be willing to move to it. My experience is that as I work towards it and as I move to it, those people come alive. Those people show up in my life. I wind up meeting those people. And the people that push buttons and nag and all this other stuff, they are gone. Not that, you know, and I could see them on the dating sites. I could see them by their profiles. Not next. Nope. Not happening. Boom. Thank you for introducing me to her. She seems like a really nice girl. Boom. I know it. Boom. I got the ideal. I'm not going there. It's not happening. I know what goes on that way. Right? But what if we fall short of the chosen ideal? Does this mean you're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. But this is only a half truth. It depends on me and my motives. If I am sorry for what I have done and have the honest desire to let God take me to better things, we believe that we will be forgiven. That's my experience. So if I fall short, if I do some things that I don't want to do, I get on my knees and I say, "Dear God, please forgive me my weakness. Please mold me and help me to live up to the sexual ideal that you've created for me." You know? And then I move on, to try to either make those things right or to continue to change or to allow God to change me. But if I am not sorry and my conduct continues to harm other people, boom, we are quite sure to drink, period. So if you're carrying on some behavior, you know it's not right for relationships, you know it's not right for you, you know it goes against your own moral principles and whatever, and 6 years, 6 months, 10 years, 11 years, 22 years, whatever it is, if you're carrying on it, this book is telling us you're quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are the facts out of our experience. So every day is why I say that prayer, "Dear God, please mold me and help me to live up to my sexual ideal," because I need God's help. So then, what happens? And summarizing about this fourth step, right? We have been through about page 70. We've been through about our personal inventory. We've written down a lot. We've listed and analyzed our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and fatality, right? We begin to see where the terrible destructiveness, where it commences to start terrible destructiveness. We even begin to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men and women, even our enemies. We look on them as sick people. We have listed them on paper. We've listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and willing to straighten them out if we can. It says, next page, if you have already made a decision, step 3, and an inventory of our grosser handicaps, step 4, it says here, you have made a beginning. Circle the word beginning. Mm-hmm. Right? Beginning. You're not done. This is just the start of the thing. There's a long way to go. This is the beginning. So what's next? What is next? Well, it says on one of these pages that when we decided who is to hear our story, sponsor, we've written down inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. I'm sorry. This is the deal. This is what we do. When we decide who is to hear our inventory, we waste no time. Page 75. We waste no time. It's not telling me to write inventory and then to start playing tiddlywinks. Waste no time. Sponsor, I'm done. Let's go. Let's rock and roll. Let's do this thing. Right? Now I'm getting ready for the fifth step. Why do I do the fifth step? Page 75. Page 75. Mm-hmm. Same paragraph. I am engaged on a life or death errand. Not talking about alcohol. Life or death. I'm on a life or death errand. If I don't pass this along, if I don't share this information with somebody else, if I don't, I'm not completely thorough and honest about this thing, you know, then I'm not taking this thing seriously as a life or death issue. And alcoholism is a life or death issue for me. It'll settle for me drunk, but it wants to kill me. It wants me dead. That's my experience. I see it. I see it in so many different forms. How this thing, 10 years sober, still wants to just kill me. I'm on a life or death errand. That's number one. Another reason, and they say on page 72, the best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time and time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. I'd like to hear what those are. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Boom. They, having persevered with the rest of the program, right? So now they're talking about a guy who's done some inventory, written some stuff, maybe assignments for sponsors on steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, but they didn't complete the inventory. They weren't honest about everything. They held some things back. Those things that somebody says, you know, I'm going to take to my grave and all this other stuff. First of all, that's nonsense, right? It's just nonsense stuff. You know, I'm going to take it to my grave. Like, who started that, like, code of honor, whatever? Like, where does that come from? Take it to my grave. You know, it's just kind of a sick thought, too, right? To, you know, it's also going to take me to my grave, according to this, if I'm an alcoholic. The thing that I'm going to take to my grave will probably take me to it. But having, you know, now going through the rest of the program, they held some things on their inventory, right? They start making amends. They start helping other people. They start sponsoring people, whatever. They wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took their inventory all right. They hung on to some of the worst items in stock, though. They only thought they were losing their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary. Until we told someone else all of our story. So, just in case, there's some things on my resentment inventory, some things on my fear inventory, some things on my sex inventory that aren't on paper. Like, for example, I'm not mad at Quick Check, but I stole from them when I was 6 years old, right? Those things I show up with here too, right? It's not part of sex. It's not a part of fear. It's not a part of resentment. It's not a part of these things. I'm bringing that stuff too. You know, those little behaviors, you know? You know, like, you know, I don't have a problem with the Tylenol company, but I stole some from, you know, CVS. Yeah, it goes, I'm bringing it here. All of my story. I'm trying to, everything that I'm consciously aware of, I'm bringing in. All right? And it says that we only learn humility, fearlessness, and honesty until we bring someone all of this stuff. As best as we can with whatever we got, whenever we do this thing, we bring it. And however it comes, however your sponsor suggests you do it, I recommend it. Now, somebody had said something. I was hearing a talk. And this person said something really cool. Said, alcoholism creates for me an imaginary life. Alcoholism creates for me a fantasy world. I drink so that I can live in that world. I do other things so that I can live in this fantasy, imaginary world. And I dig it. It was already starting the imaginary world when I was 5 and 6. You know, it was already, you know what I mean? Like, I am black and white, Dorothy in Kansas or whatever. I have a couple of drinks, boom, Wizard of Oz, Technicolor, right? You know, Pink Floyd music matching up with the way the Munchkins dance, all that kind of stuff, right? It's like Technicolor, man, you know? I get to live now. I drink to get back to that imaginary life. And it may not be all, you know, Technicolor Munchkins and rainbows and, you know, balloons coming to take me away at the end of the story, right? The imaginary life eventually turns into, you know, you suck, you're a loser, you're no good, you're a piece of garbage, go kill yourself, jump in front of the subway, loser, right? That's eventually the imaginary life that I drink and live in. And then what winds up happening is eventually, with or without a drink, I'm just living in that life. Mm-hmm. I'm not a guy who puts down the drink and all of a sudden I'm back in Kansas. But when I do return to Kansas, it's right here in the fifth step. It really is. Mm-hmm. I return to Kansas in the fifth step because the fifth step for me is about truth. Truth about that imaginary world. Truth about that fantasy life. Truth about all the delusions that I've been living in. Truth about all of the stories and belief systems that I've been living and holding to all of my life. The truth starts to come right here in the fifth step. Thank you, God. Praise God. Thank you for this step, God. I get some truth. Finally. Finally. And it's like this, right? When I wake up out of this fifth step, right, all of a sudden, you're not a coward after all. Actually, you're a man of strength. I took your strength. That's what I did with my dad. You know, called him a coward, thought of him as a coward, thought of him as a weak man. But as the result of me writing my inventory, I say, no, my father was a man of strength all this while. Mm. You know? This one, you know, you were cold. You were distant. You were like a robot with emotions with me. But after writing inventory and after sharing it on a fifth step, I see the fear and the delusion and all the nonsense that's behind it all, and I realize you've actually been a loving, caring person there for me my whole life, and I just couldn't see it. You know? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're stupid. This one's an idiot. These people know nothing. Mm-hmm. But what's the truth? My truth in that experience is that actually your simple way of life is one that I need in order to move forward and be a complete whole person. I actually intellectualized the crap out of a healthy lifestyle. I could intellectualize myself out of doing this step work. You know what? Your simple way of just chopping wood, carrying water, going to work, being a nice guy, whatever, is actually something that I should admire. You were the smart one all along. I'm the idiot. You know? Hating the neighbors. Right? These people are a bunch of jerks. They don't know anything. They're this religion. They're that religion. They're this race and creed. They belong to this political institution, all this other stuff. When in all reality, they were just happy people living and dancing through life and had nothing to do about stomping on my will or freedom. And in fact, once I started opening doors for them and saying hello, neighbor, and waving to them as they drove past my front lawn and offered maybe to, shovel their driveway or something like that, did I actually see that it's just been a happy world around me? And it wasn't that the rest of the world needed to change, but it was me. And the wizards that I had chased in my imaginary life, the people that I chased in the imaginary life, that I idolized, that I worshipped, that you're the best, and you're the greatest, and you're this, all the other stuff, were only shysters. We're only shysters the whole time. We're only people leading me astray into something that was only taking me further and further and further away from God. And they had their potions, and they had their elixirs, and they had their powders, and their pipes, and you name it. I chased it. Right? All of the things that I idolized, I'm seeing now truth about it. Those things are empty. Those things aren't real. You were selling me snake oil, right? The woman that I called a witch, the woman that I thought of as a witch my whole life, the evil, dark, sadistic, yelling, screaming, everywhere I turned, there's that nasty person. Wrote tons of inventory on you. Tons. And I just find out that, oh, your sister got all the attention. Your sister was the one who was, loved. No one paid attention to you either as a child. You're only doing what you were learned, what you were taught to do. Someone treated you that way, and now you're treating me that way. I get to experience truth. And now that witch has no power. In fact, I get to see, not only does that witch have no power, but there's some love and compassion there. There's some feeling and some emotion there. I can see them as a different person. I could see them as a sick person. You didn't ask to be that way. They did this to you. And you followed this path. And why? Because it's the best you knew. It was the best you were taught. That's how they gave it to you. This step gives me an experience with truth. And I get to see, just like in that other story, that all the while, the angels were there. All the while, God was loving me, sending me a guardian angel to get me out of this jam, mm-hmm. right? Sending me angels and saints and people praying for me. And sometimes having an actual bubble around me. When I woke up on the New Jersey Turnpike, driving south in the northbound lane with the trucks coming a mile away, I come out of a blackout. This is what's coming. That God was with me all the while, keeping me safe, keeping me protected, having a bubble around me. The God that I criticized or wanted to use like a wizard myself. He'd have been there all the while and sending, all sorts of, hey, Michael, get off that path. Hey, Michael, that's not a good idea. Hey, you keep going here. I've already showed you some county jail. You want to see some state? You want to see some federal? That loving God had always been trying to show me another way. That God was always a loving, merciful, powerful, ever-present God in my life. I just was not able to see it because I was living in an imaginary life. I was living in a world that alcoholism created, that my mind created, that my mind believed, and I tried to convince you all that it was real. And I drank to get there, because once you started to challenge me that it wasn't real, screw you, I'm going out on the deck, I'm killing back a liter of rum. You're done. We're out. This relationship isn't going to work anymore. You start to challenge my imaginary life. And so then I get to see how I've treated my friends, how I've treated these things, and how it was me. I get to return to Kansas, a new man, a new person. I get out of that fantasy and imaginary life, and I live in the real world. And as a result of being in that real world, and there's some truths in that real world that are tough to take, but then there's a whole bunch of truths in that real world that were there before me and that I wanted. They were there. It's here. You know, I really thought you hated me. I really thought you didn't like me. I really thought you didn't respect me. But after inventory, I found that you loved me the whole time. You were just, I wouldn't let you love me. I wouldn't let you show up for me. And when you did, I would criticize how you showed up. I made you the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and the Scarecrow and the Witch and the Munchkins and all this other stuff and the Apple Bombers and the Bad Trees and all these other things. I had that. I lived it. And what happens? After I have some experience with this truth, after I have some experience with this love, and this is it. So, I had a lot of stuff in my inventory. I'm lucky. God let me see a lot early off. And I wrote books and books and books. You don't have to write books and books and books. That's just what came, that's how it went for me. You write what the truth is and what's there. However you're directed by your sponsor, you follow that. But for me, it was a lot. And they get to this point. I didn't trust anybody with all this stuff. I didn't trust anybody. I'd been to some meetings down south where I'd heard people blabbing things about people and gossip in AA. And let me just tell you right now, gossip in AA is going to kill AA. Right? You know, talking about other people in Alcoholics Anonymous with some sort of desire to gain something from you, you're destroying your group. You're destroying your network. You're destroying your relationships. You're destroying the fellowship. And because I'd had some experience with that in South Jersey when I was first starting to get sober, thankfully I got hooked up with a healthy meeting in what is now Springfield, New Jersey. I'd gotten to be around some of the healthy, good people in Alcoholics Anonymous who would never do this. There was one guy I trusted with all this craziness, because there was the sex stuff and there was all the different hatreds and the stupidity and silly fears. I only trusted one guy. And what happened was, and that was wound up being my third sponsor. One of the times I'd written inventory, while I was writing inventory, I went on vacation in upstate New York, and I had this spiritual experience with a waterfall. Right? I love waterfalls. Mm. I love waterfalls. And in this particular experience, you know, I was moved. My breath was taken away. I had a lot of other stuff to talk about. My experience with this waterfall went on for what winds up being hours, okay? And my sponsor gives me some final assignments about this inventory stuff, but he gets a job in Texas. And he says, when you finish this assignment, you know, I want you to start, you know, finding, you know, Jimmy or Eddie or you know, so-and-so, who you can read inventory with, do your fifth step with. And that scared the crap out of me, right? I only trusted this one guy, Peter, and he's now suggesting that I talk to Blabbermouth and, you know, can't keep a secret, and Johnny who thinks who the hell he is and all this other stuff. You wanted me to do that? You're crazy. You're out of your mind. So I started to try to like coincide my finishing of this assignment for when my sponsor would come back. And when he would come back, it wasn't done. So then he goes away again. And I'm doing all this manipulative stuff to try to get it so that this guy is the only guy who hears my inventory. I get so sick, even sicker than I was already when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to like create this like ideal scenario where he gets off a plane and I could read him in the inventory, that I wind up like I'm physically, mentally sick over this stuff. And he just picks up the phone one day, calls me, and says, "Done. You find somebody, you know, today's Wednesday. You find somebody Friday. I want to know who it is that you're going to be doing this step with. That's it." And so when he said it to me, I felt instantly relieved. God had answered a prayer, because I was like, "God help me, God, I couldn't stand this stuff." He goes, "Okay, you know." I said, "Okay." I hung up the phone. I got sick, right? Because then I started to think about, oh, he's going to hear that story, and he's going to whatever, and he's going to laugh at that sex thing, and he's going to laugh at that story, and they're all going to think I'm an idiot, and they're, you know, they all know what's true, and all this other stuff. And so what wound up happening was, is, you know, I did what I was supposed to do. I prayed and asked God to show me somebody who was going to hear this fifth step. And as soon as I said that prayer, the pain in my stomach went away. And I knew that by Friday, I would know who was going to hear my fifth step. And so I prayed and I meditated, "Dear God, please show me." And, you know, I was getting these three names, these same three names and faces kept showing up in my head, keep showing up when I think about it. And I go, "God, put them in order. Who could, this guy, who is he going to be?" Whatever. And nothing is showing up. Nothing's showing up at all. So then what I wind up doing with any good sick person would do is I call up Joe, John, and Frank to do due diligence on Jimmy, Joe, and Jason, right? Because I want them to know, you know, I want to know the inside dirt. Is he going to blab? Can I trust him with this stuff? Whatever, right? And so while I call up this guy, Rogan, right, to give me the dirt on Jimmy, right? You know, because, you know, I'm thinking Jimmy's a blabbermouth and all this other stuff, whatever. And all of a sudden, this guy, he's at work. He goes, "Hey, how's it going? Da, 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 da. Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking about this thing with Jimmy, you know, whatever, and blah, blah." And he goes, "Hey, I'm at work. Can I put you on hold for a second?" Puts me at hold. I'm standing outside of my parents' house in Middletown, New Jersey. I'm walking around. And as soon as this guy puts me on hold, I go, "God, do you want me to do it with this guy? This total blabbermouth, big mouth guy in AA, like, you want me to do it with him?" And he's not a blabbermouth, big mouth guy, but that's what's going on in my head, right? He's some sort of gossip. He's a chatty Cathy, whatever. All this other stuff. This is what's going on in my head. "You want me to do it with this guy? If you want me to do it with this guy, God, let me know." So the guy comes back from the phone. He goes, "Hey, you know, this fifth step, it's a lot like waterfalls. Right?" He's like, "You know, in the summertime, they come rushing down and whatever. And you know, spring, it trickles. And in winter, it's like this. And in the fall." And he just gives me this total analogy about how the fifth step is like a waterfall. And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, another call, put on hold." Right? I'm like, "Dude, God, you know what I mean? You just, whatever, this guy's giving me the waterfall story, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's got to be the sign, right? You know what I mean? I just spent like, you know, like 9 hours with you over at this other place, waterfall stuff, you know, whatever." So the guy comes back and I go, "Hey, what are you doing tomorrow?" He goes, "I think I'm hearing the fifth step, man." Right? And that guy wound up listening to my fifth step for days. For days and days and days. And what happened as a result of it, at the end, he sent me off and he says, "You know, if there's something that you don't, you know, if there's something you're missing, if there's something that you're holding back, if there's something that you need to talk about, let me know." So as I'm driving home, I'm going to this place where I'm supposed to spend an hour. And I'm driving in the car, and it's an hour away drive. It's like from Freehold to Middletown, something like that, Howell, whatever. And I got this lump in my throat. And I know what it's about. You know, I get this lump in my throat. I can't swallow. It's like, whatever. So I call him up. When I get to the place, I call him up. I go, "Hey, listen, there's this situation about me and prescription pills. And I mentioned it to my sponsor, but, you know, I feel like I wasn't completely honest about it. And I just want you to know, like, you know, I use that stuff, you know, inappropriately or whatever. And, you know, I just wanted, you know, that's it." He goes, "That's it? He goes, well, not a big deal. I mean, you know, whatever. Talk about it with your sponsor. That's cool. Is there anything else? I said, no, that's it. You know everything, dude. You know it all. He says, okay, go spend that hour by yourself. And as soon as I went in to go spend that hour with myself, I could feel myself swallow whole. Like that lump in my throat was gone. And then when I swallowed, the lump in my throat was not only gone, but I come to this realization that that lump had always been there. That lump was there my whole life, because that feeling of swallowing clean and clear, I had never experienced in my life. And when at any point in time that I'm not clear and clean with either members of AA, my sponsor, my family, and my relationships, whatever, that lump comes back, that feeling comes back. And it's a little like soul gut test. How am I doing, God? I swallow. And if I'm clean and clear, if it goes down smooth, if I get that sensation, I know it. I know it because I never had that sensation before. And as a result of doing that, and telling him about the sex stuff and my relationships and the violence and the law stuff, what wound up happening is I wound up experiencing this. These are called the fifth step promises, and they're on page 75. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Let me tell you something. If you had told me that I could be alone at perfect peace and ease when I walked into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, sign me up. Because I can't even sit and watch, you know, the Yankees game in peace and ease. Forget about, like, doing Thanksgiving or Christmas or any of these other things. You can look the world in the eye. And that was my experience. But the most important person I was able to look in the eye was me, the man in the mirror. I looked in the mirror from this day forward, and I don't want to kill the guy in the mirror. I don't hate the guy in the mirror. He's no longer too fat, too skinny, too stupid, too ugly, too hairy, too bald, too any of that stuff. He is a child of God. He is whole and complete. He's worthy of love. He is a good man. He's a man of God. That's what I see. God lets me see the truth after this. I could look myself in the eye. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. I just told you, right? I start to see God had been there the whole time. We had many spiritual beliefs, but now I start to begin to have a spiritual experience, and this feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. That's my experience. At that point in time, this thought of drinking was gone. Now it's just like, how do I be a gentleman? How do I become this man that you want me to be? You know, how do I possibly help somebody else through these 12 steps? It was no longer about a drink or this other stuff. Now it's, how do I become what you meant for me to be? We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And my experience is, it's like this. And it is like hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I had a job interview not too long ago. One of my friends said, you know, don't forget to pull up a chair for God. Right, and I went into 3 interviews that day. It was a law firm, right? You know, from one big shot to another big shot to the biggest of big shots, right? And every time I went into the office, you know, there was always, like, you know, desk, big shot, 2 chairs. I went like this to one chair, and then I moved the other chair. I'd move the one chair. That's for you, God. And then I come down and sit in my chair. I'm ready for the interview. It was just like that, walking hand in hand. Daddy, let's go on a job interview. Daddy, let's go on a date. Daddy, come take me to the movies. God, show me how to show up for this blind date, for this situation, for Christmas, for Thanksgiving, for this sponsee who's got some stuff that I don't know anything about. I don't know even how to deal with some of the things that they've been through. God, show me how to do this. Hand in hand. And that's my experience. And maybe, I'll tell you, if I'd known that that's what my experience was going to be, when I started the fifth step, then I would have written down in this book, this is another reason why, or I would have told you, this is another reason why. Because for me to be able to look in the mirror is all the is all the cash and prizes that AA could ever give me, is to be okay with me and have some experience with truth. Good or bad, right or wrong, I am who I am, and thank you, God, for making me who you are. I am. Amen.
Thank you. So.